As I mentioned at the top of the broadcast, research credit for the following story goes to Eric from the East Bay, who's a longtime listener and contributor to One Step Beyond. And Eric got this from the East Bay Express. And he specifically got it from the East Bay Express for Friday. Or I guess it's just called the Express, maybe not the East Bay Express, but the Express. It's a free publication, which is published, obviously, in the East Bay. And it's from the Express issue of Friday, June 20th of 1986. This is an article called Running Scared, and it's authored by a gentleman named Paul Rauber, last name R-A-U-B-E-R, who many listeners may be familiar with from his former work for KPFA. He used to be on the KPFA staff. I don't think he is anymore, although I could be wrong about that. But at any rate, he is a former KPFA staffer, was for many years, and has written a really, really interesting article for The Express. The name of the person in question here is Roger Heffron, H-E-F-F-E-R-A-N. It's going to be a long article, and there are going to be some fairly complex technological discussions of hardware that was going to be sold to China. So pay close attention and tape if you can, and I'll try to highlight the key parts of this article as best I can under the circumstances that we're operating under here. And then we'll go back, and obviously, as is our custom, we'll discuss the situation at greater length and in greater depth as we go along. Again, from the East, from the Express, June 20th, 1986, Running Scared by Paul Rauber. 2 years ago this month, Roger L. Heffron was running for the Republican nomination to face 8th Congressional District Representative Ron Dellums. Today, this former senior State Department official is running scared. The administration for which he once worked, he says, is, quote, out of control, unquote. As a result, the former Oakland chair of the Reagan-Bush 1984 campaign says that he fears for his life. During the Revolutionary War, the rebels' nascent intelligence system had a unique classification for unverifiable pieces of information. Important if true. The bizarre tale of the apostasy of Roger Heffron, strange and complex and not a little bit weird, exceedingly well documented in some particulars, with other major assumptions requiring huge leaps of faith, clearly falls into that category. This prominent local Republican claims to have reliable inside information that a secret, code-named operation is now underway, one that will culminate in an all-out U.S. attack on Libya this October. And to those who doubt that even the Reagan administration could be capable of such recklessness, he points to an earlier display of geopolitical brinksmanship, one which he and some like-minded colleagues were able to frustrate, involving a sale of sophisticated computer equipment to the People's Republic of China. Revealing an impressive array of secret and confidential documents from the CIA and the Departments of Defense and State, Heffron maintains that the sale, which was proposed late in 1982, was intended to give the Chinese nuclear superiority over the Soviet Union. Had the efforts to block Reagan's policy not been successful, Heffron says, there could, in his view, have been only two possible consequences: Soviet acknowledgement of the supremacy of its arch-rival, or a Sino-Soviet nuclear war. Heffron says he decided to go public with a 2.5-year-old story after the recent bombardment of Libya by U.S. warplanes. In revealing it, he says, he is putting himself in personal danger. Quote, they play hardball, Heffron says of his former employers. That's one of the reasons my house is for sale. I've described this to some gray eminences in three-piece suits, bohemian club types, who tell me my life is in danger as soon as I speak. Skipping down in the article, Heffron has a two-sided biography. One side composes into a perfect picture of Republican stability. High-level service in three Republican administrations, an elegant home in the Oakland Hills, a job with an Emeryville food brokerage firm, an unsuccessful but credible campaign to unseat the East Bay's radical Democratic congressman. The other side, however, is laced with private and finally public doubts about the tenets of his Republican roots. Doubts about U.S. foreign policy going back to his days as field interpreter in Vietnam, quarrels with the local Republican establishment, a growing fear and loathing of the actions of his own State Department, leading first to his departure from Washington, and now to his denunciation of the Reagan administration. When I interviewed him shortly before his press conference in his Oakland home, Heffron and his fiancée were packing up, getting ready to leave town as soon as possible. A youngish-looking 39 with a short beard flecked with gray, Heffron was waiting for his attorney to arrive so he could sign a will and power of attorney papers, which he said would allow him to disappear rapidly after he broke his story. His paranoia was rather intense. It's not legal for me to have these papers, you know, he said, referring to the secret documents he was giving me to buttress his argument. It's not safe for you to have them either, unquote. He refused to be photographed before his press conference, saying that, quote, it would be best if there weren't too many pictures of me floating around, if you know what I mean, unquote. The career Washington bureaucrat and ex-candidate who didn't want his picture taken says that on the day after the April raids on Libya, he called back to Washington to see if there was, as he suspected, quote, something more going on than meets the eye, unquote. His suspicions were confirmed by otherwise unidentified, quote, friends, people who are very, very, very knowledgeable, people who have a common interest, people who believe in tradition but not in right-wing paranoia, unquote. What he says he learned was that, quote, beginning last fall, there was and has been unfolding ever since a codenamed plan which climaxes this October with a land, sea, and air invasion of Libya. Everything that's gone on in this escalation between Gaddafi and Reagan has been orchestrated around creating an American public sentiment in favor of a full-scale invasion this fall, unquote. I'm going to read that last paragraph again. What he says he learned was that, quote, beginning last fall, there was and has been unfolding ever since a codenamed plan which climaxes this October with a land, sea, and air invasion of Libya. Everything that's gone on in this escalation between Gaddafi and Reagan has been orchestrated around creating an American public sentiment in favor of a full-scale invasion this fall, unquote. While he has no documentary proof of what he calls the insane Libyan invasion plans, Heffron hopes that by revealing what he knows about the attempted computer sale in 1982 and 3, he will shake loose some leaks on the Libya scheme. A side effect, he hopes, will be, quote, to make people take a closer look at what our country is really doing, unquote. Again quoting, we actually have a conscious policy in this country of doing whatever form of military manipulation we need to do to achieve world domination and supremacy, he says. First designed through this little business with China and the Soviet Union, now by picking a war in Libya at the furthest end of the Soviet Middle East supply line. I hope that by bringing this out, I'm doing something that might cause the Libyan invasion plans to get exposed and get stopped, unquote. And again, I'm going to read that last paragraph again, too, just so it really sinks in. Quote, we actually have a conscious policy in this country of doing whatever form of military manipulation we need to do to achieve world domination and supremacy, he says. First designed through this little business with China and the Soviet Union, now by picking a war in Libya at the farthest end of the Soviet Middle East supply line. I hope that by bringing this out now, I'm doing something that might cause the Libyan invasion plans to get exposed and get stopped, unquote. And next, so you get some idea of the background of this particular individual, the Rauber goes on to give a little bit of biographical information about him, and I think it's important to listen to this in light of the very strong statements which Heffron has made, and which obviously are reminiscent of some of the kinds of things we talk about on this program that May talks about on Roll Watchers, coming here from a conservative Republican. Roger Heffron grew up in Jerry Ford's district in Michigan. In fact, Ford was a friend of the family who got Heffron's father a job in the 50s overseeing the Defense Department's real estate holdings, and Roger was raised in the milieu of Washington Republicanism in the Eisenhower era. It was a tour of duty with the 1st Cavalry Division in Vietnam, first near the DMZ and later at the Parrot's Peak, that began to sour him on his Republican heritage. On his return, he even participated in the 1970 Vietnam moratorium, carrying a candle around the White House. He later was arrested and beaten up in the 1971 May Day demo. That demonstration, obviously. At this point, he says, quote, I realized I was not going to get anywhere effective by being against the, Work in the system, that was my perspective at the time, even though I didn't like everything about it. I always held out hope that somehow I could do something, unquote. Heffron first worked with Richard Nixon's price control program in 1972, ending up in the rather high-profile position of explaining food price controls to the food industry. When food was decontrolled, he became executive assistant to Nixon's special representative for trade negotiations, a job later made famous in the Carter years under Robert Strauss. Under the Ford administration, he served as an assistant speechwriter to U.N. Ambassador William Scranton. Retreating to Southern California during the Carter interregnum, he found work as a commodities broker and says he helped Nixon with research for his Vietnam apologia, The Real War. In the early 80s, he returned to Washington with Ronald Reagan and became an executive assistant to Assistant Secretary of State for Economics and Business, Richard McCormick. His office was primarily concerned with East-West trade and technology transfers to Eastern Bloc countries. In March of 1983, for example, he was the senior State Department representative at the grain talks in Moscow. It was while working for McCormick in 1982 that Heffron became involved in the imbroglio surrounding the proposed sale of high-tech computer equipment to the People's Republic of China. Two different systems were involved, the so-called HiShare 700, a hybrid computer with a mixture of digital and analog processes, and advanced telephone switching equipment, along with the technology to build it, from ITT's Belgian subsidiary. The administration had a mundane justification for the sale of both systems. The HiShare 700 was to be sold to China's Harbin Polytechnical University for scientific research and education, unquote, tasks elsewhere described as population study and electric motor design, unquote. The telephone switching technology was said to be a means to upgrade the antiquated Chinese telephone network, thus removing a major impediment to further economic development. But classified papers provided by Heffron clearly show that both systems were also known by the U.S. to have important military applications. A secret CIA report dated December 8, 1982 states that, quote, "We believe that China's primary objective is to obtain dual-use U.S. technology to serve military as well as civilian modernization goals. In a number of cases where the United States has granted exceptions to export dual-use technology, we have evidence to show that the technology has been diverted for use in areas currently proscribed by U.S. regulations," unquote. Military cooperation between the United States and China has been growing steadily since the start of the Reagan years, and according to the Wall Street Journal, has reached the point where joint military exercises and trainings are in the works, and some military intelligence about the Soviet Union is also shared. Although such cooperation has historically been a pet bugaboo of the extreme right, the so-called Taiwan lobby, who have never forgiven the U.S. for recognizing the Red Chinese, unquote. Ronald Reagan has been able to finesse this crowd by playing the stronger suit of anti-Sovietism. A presidential directive signed by Reagan on June 4, 1981, called for U.S. support for, quote, "a secure, friendly, and modernizing China as an effective counterweight to growing Soviet military power," unquote. As we'll see later on, interrupting here, of course, Reagan may have been able to quiet the Taiwan lobby, the China lobby, by offering up something a little closer to what they want here, namely a destroyed Red China. We'll get into that here in a little later. The directive sets out a predisposition for approval of exports to China, which had been granted most favored nation trading status, unless these exports constitute a major national security risk in one of four special mission areas, unquote. Nuclear weapons, nuclear weapons delivery systems, electronic and anti-submarine warfare, and intelligence. In the debate over the HiShare 700, a cautious Caspar Weinberger and the Department of Defense argued that the Chinese acquisition of the computer would indeed constitute a major national security risk, unquote. His arguments are borne out by secret documents squirreled away by Roger Heffron. For instance, according to a secret January 7, 1983 memorandum from Secretary of Commerce Malcolm Baldrige to William Clark, then an assistant to President for National Security Affairs, quote, "The HiShare 700 system is presently used by the U.S. Defense Establishment for the design of strategic nuclear delivery systems. White Sands Missile Range currently uses four such systems," unquote. The memo goes on to note that the HiShare 700 was used in the design of the space shuttle, the Pershing 2 ballistic missile, and the cruise missile, and that the Air Force uses it for electronic warfare simulations. Quoting again, "Defense Department experts say that the use of a HiShare 700 allows design engineers to eliminate two and sometimes three test firings," claims Heffron, "moving directly to what would have been a fourth generation of the same missile," unquote. Moreover, the Baldrige memo assumes that whatever the ostensible civilian reason for the sale, it would be diverted to military use. Again quoting, "Harbin Polytechnical Institute, which seeks enhancement of the current hybrid computer," the memo states, "is subordinate to the 7th machine building industry, which presently contributes to the development and manufacture of strategic missiles. Harbin is also located near the Military Engineering Institute, which is heavily engaged in military research. Intelligence sources expect the hybrid computer to be used for missile development," unquote. While all the different federal agencies agreed on these facts, they still differed as to whether the sale should be okayed. The State Department, with the exceptions of Roger Heffron and other members of what he calls the silent conspiracy, unquote, recommended approval, as did the Commerce Department and the CIA. So did George Keyworth, Reagan's science advisor. The Defense Department remained adamantly opposed. Meanwhile, an equally fierce battle was raging over the $1.5 billion 15-year contract ITT has made with the Chinese Ministry of Post and Telecommunications to provide China with sophisticated switching equipment. Heffron argues that had the Chinese actually been solely interested in updating their telephone switching system, they could have obtained adequate equipment at one-fifth the cost. The lure of the deal, he says, was ITT's promise to set up a plant in China where computer chips and wafers could be manufactured at the 1 micron level, that is, with components 1/100th the size of the 10 micron chips inside an IBM PC, or 1/500th the size of those possessed by any computer the Chinese were capable of building themselves. Chinese possession of 1 micron technology, he says, would enable them to miniaturize the onboard computers that guide and regulate the detonation of their now bulky nuclear missiles. It would give them technology the equal of that presently held by the U.S., allowing them to leapfrog past the Soviet Union. The large mass of the current computer payload requires massive missiles, Heffron argues, meaning bigger motors and more fuel. Hence, not only could the Chinese not produce an accurate ICBM, in more immediate terms, the northwestern corner of the Soviet Union was out of their range. Knowing this, the Soviets have installed many missile sites near the border with Finland and Norway. In Heffron's scenario, all Soviet sites would be within the reach of Chinese missiles if the payloads were smaller and the guidance systems accurate enough. Heffron is directly confirmed in some of this by CIA documents. In a secret November 17, 1982 memorandum, Charles Martin of the CIA's China Division, unquote, tells Heffron that the technological know-how in the ITT proposal, quote, is representative of state-of-the-art production in the United States today. Such capabilities are at least two generations beyond current PRC integrated circuit state-of-the-art, unquote. More to the point, Martin adds that, quote, China could use the acquired technology to accelerate the development of more advanced electronic systems where higher reliability, lower weight, smaller volume, and lower power requirements are crucial. Such systems could be used in strategic missiles, space communications, and reconnaissance systems, submarine warfare detection systems, and cryptographic equipment, unquote. Skipping down still further in the article, Heffron is convinced that not only did the U.S. know that the two computer systems might be adapted to nuclear missile production, but that they were intended for that purpose. Either quote, quoting again from Heffron, either one of the two computer transfers would be significant. The high share gave them missile design, the ITT sale gave them miniaturization of the onboard capacity so they could run with a much smaller missile. If the U.S. government really intended to give them a high share 700 and 1 micron production technology of computer parts, obviously they intended to do it as a threat to the Soviet Union. That's what any military analyst would say, unquote. Heffron bases his argument on the historical enmity between the Soviets and Chinese, along with the paranoia of the Soviet leadership. More than half of all Soviet missiles, tanks, and soldiers are at the Chinese border, he says. They're terribly paranoid about what's going on down there. The only thing they have right now is a 20-year advantage in technology, and we're taking that away. There is no way any Soviet leader would allow China to get ahead of them in nuclear delivery. The PRC, that's People's Republic of China, Red China, obviously, the PRC was being set up to receive a preemptive strike from the Soviet Union. I'm going to read that last statement again, unquote, by the way. This is quoting Heffron directly. The PRC was being set up to receive a preemptive strike from the Soviet Union, unquote. Skipping down still further in the article, Heffron's secret documents do show that the computer sales beat around the bureaucracy at various levels for several months. Heffron claims that in part this is because whenever he was able to explain their military significance, the sales would be dropped, only to resurface, quote, like a hydra-headed monster, unquote, at some other point in the system. The inference is that someone was pushing for it very hard, and Heffron identifies that someone as Vice President George Bush, the former head of the CIA and the former head of the U.S. liaison office in China. This is Bush's, quote, this is Bush's baby, so to speak, says Heffron. He was the mastermind. Not many trails lead all the way to the top and what's beyond the top. This one does. Reagan's at the top, and Bush is what's behind the top, unquote. In Heffron's view, Reagan is, quote, a puppet on a string. He went into office as president but has lost control to his advisors, lost control to his vice president. George Bush is running this country. George Bush and the people behind George Bush are making the decisions, unquote. And again, I'm going to reread that last paragraph to you. The inference is that someone was pushing for it, that is the sale of the two technologies to China. The inference is that someone was pushing for it very hard, and Heffron identifies that someone as Vice President George Bush, the former head of the CIA and the former head of the U.S. liaison office in China. This is Bush's baby, so to speak, says Heffron. He was the mastermind. Not many trails lead all the way to the top, and what's behind the top, this one does. Reagan's at the top, and Bush is what's behind the top, unquote. In Heffron's view, Reagan is, quote, a puppet on a string. He went into office as president but has lost control to his advisors, lost control to his vice president. George Bush is running this country. George Bush and the people behind George Bush are making the decisions, unquote. According to Heffron, the High Share 700 proposal reached the very highest level in early 1983 at a National Security Council meeting chaired by Bush shortly before a trip by George Shultz to China. The vote was 7-1 in favor of approving the sale, with the only dissent coming from an unlikely dove, Secretary of Defense Weinberger. Bush and former CIA Chief William Colby briefed their colleagues, asserts Heffron, and then outlined the presidential decision to give the People's Republic of China a design computer adequate to improve their range and accuracy so the PRC would become a full-scale threat to the Soviet Union, i.e., capable of striking anywhere within Soviet territory, unquote. This argument, he says, was able to carry the day, and George Shultz left for Peking with the sale in his portfolio. It was at this point that Heffron and his silent conspiracy, unquote, played their trump card to block the sale. One of Heffron's colleagues had dug up an obscure provision of a Congressional Defense Reorganization Act, which stated that if the president or vice president overruled the National Security Advisor, the Secretary of Defense, on a national security issue at a meeting of the National Security Council, a formal report must be made to Congress. Quote, once George Shultz was tucked away aboard his Air Force jet to Peking, says Heffron, President Reagan received a telephone call from a prominent conservative senator. Heffron thinks it was either Scoop Jackson or Jesse Helms, asking if there wasn't something that the president had forgotten to say. Later, Shultz got a cable and was woken up in the middle of the night and told not to give them the computer, unquote. Following the scratching of the high share sale, the ITT technology transfer was killed by less colorful bureaucratic means at the undersecretary level. Heffron had won, but at the cost of his bureaucratic effectiveness. In addition, he claims, by crossing George Bush, quote, I was actually in danger, unquote. Again, we'll read that last sentence again. In addition, he claims, by crossing George Bush, quote, I was actually in danger, unquote. He left the State Department and returned to California, this time to the Bay Area to run against Ron Dellums. When I left the Reagan administration, I couldn't just join civilian life, he says. I wanted to get into Congress, and that's why I ran in 1984 unsuccessfully for the Republican nomination. The race to become the 8th District's Republican sacrificial lamb was particularly bitter that year. Opposing Heffron was Charles Connor, a black candidate supported by the local Republican establishment, notably Cornell Meyer of Kaiser Industries and Claude Hutchinson. Claude Hutchinson, Dellums' 1982 opponent, who felt he had a better chance against the black incumbent than the unknown Heffron. Heffron, who claimed the support of various grassroots Republican organizations, filed suit to keep Connor off the ballot after revealing that he had changed his party affiliation from Democrat to Republican less than the required 1 year before filing his candidacy papers. In an effort to convince Alameda County Superior Court Judge William McKibben of his bona fides, Connor swore that he had the endorsements of 4 members of Congress who later denied ever supporting him. McKibben decided that removing Connor from the ballot would, quote, thwart the Democratic electoral process, unquote. After trading vicious last-minute hit pieces, Connor narrowly bested Heffron in June of 1984. Quote, their mailer was more devastating than my mailer, explains Heffron. Connor's piece placed Heffron's picture next to the famous image of Ronald Reagan wincing after having just been shot. It implied that by going to court to challenge Connor's candidacy, Heffron had proved his disloyalty to the Republican cause, an evident violation of the 11th commandment of republicanism, thou shalt not criticize another Republican. I'm going to read that the previous sentence again. Their mailer was more devastating than my mailer, explains Heffron. Connor's piece placed Heffron's picture next to the famous image of Ronald Reagan wincing after having just been shot. That's intriguing in light of some of the George Bush connections to the Reagan shooting that we'll talk about a little later. Again, quite possibly apocryphal in this context, but intriguing. Skipping down a little further in the article. Can Heffron's stories be confirmed? The same impeccable stories he claims for his knowledge of George Bush's intentions towards China are the ones he cites for the alleged autumn invasion plans for Libya, but he refuses to identify them in any way. His story could easily be seen as the self-aggrandizing unraveling of a prominent local Republican, one who has some papers marked secret about a computer sale that didn't happen 3 years ago, which he is now trying to parlay into a career on the lecture circuit. On the other hand, his paranoia seems genuine, as do his documents. Reading that last sentence again. On the other hand, his paranoia seems genuine, as do his documents. It's easy enough to accept that the Reagan administration was trying to give the Chinese a leg up on their nuclear program in order to scare the bejesus out of the Kremlin, if not plotting their destruction in a preemptive Soviet strike. As for Libya, it might give the Republican congressional candidates a boost if the U.S. offed Gaddafi right before Election Day. Stranger things have happened. Roger Heffron may not have many political or media smarts, but he could be onto something. We should all know by October. Well, I would add, of course, that's assuming that that Heffron and others are not able to generate sufficient publicity to abort that particular operation. Well, obviously, there are a lot of things in that particular article to go over. The thing that I think is most one of the most intriguing aspects of the article is the way in which this conservative Republican and a Reagan staff member, also a guy who worked with the Ford and Nixon administrations, how he is saying a lot of things which jibe very nicely with what we're saying here on One Step Beyond. Obviously, the things he says have yet to be proved, although they apparently, according to Rauber, the documents which upon which he based his arguments are quite sound. So it remains to be seen, again, whether what Heffron has to say pans out. But it is intriguing that this conservative Republican should be parroting so many of the things that, well, not necessarily parroting, but saying many of the same kinds of things about this administration that we're saying. Obviously, the scenario which he paints of basically trying to, I guess you could say, set up a technological provocation which would result in the Soviet Union's launching a nuclear strike on China is a pretty scary proposition, regardless of one's sentiments about the People's Republic of China or socialism in general. The simple fact of the matter is a major nuclear strike by Russia on China is going to have devastating worldwide impact, and of course we can assume that the Chinese would probably fire some too. People were all getting all uncomfortable about the Chernobyl the radioactivity. If there's a nuclear war between Russia and China, we here in California are going to be in mighty, mighty tough shape when the prevailing winds bring the results to us. So it's something we here in the Golden State should obviously be thinking about pretty carefully. Obviously, it's an incredibly reckless thing if this was indeed what they were trying to do. Now, on the question of Libya, it remains to be seen whether there's a I can't imagine a full-scale invasion of Libya simply because I think they what that would cost militarily for what would be gained politically is not necessarily it wouldn't be necessary to have an all-out invasion of Libya in order to achieve the political gains which the electoral gains for the Republican candidates that we can assume Reagan wants. However, some sort of large operation, a combined air, sea, and land operation, not necessarily an all-out invasion, is something to think about. As I say, maybe my instincts here are wrong, but I think that my gut instincts about what Heffron was onto here is that he had that there is some sort of that he may very well have been aware of some sort of operation in that direction, although the actual end result of a full all-out invasion of Libya may not be what they're going for. As I say, that would be pretty costly militarily. It would require an awfully large operation, and my feeling is that as he said, offing Gaddafi right before Election Day and perhaps a combined air, sea, land operation short of a total invasion is definitely something which the military could stage with relative efficiency and relatively cost-free in terms of casualties and money and so forth, and it would achieve much the same sort of political gains for the Republicans. So, again, it remains to be seen what happens in October, and again, it's possible that if Heffron and others are able to get out enough information, maybe the thing can be sort of nipped in the bud. But we obviously have been talking about Libya and Gaddafi almost ad nauseum, primarily in the whole context of the Turple and Wilson operation and the what appears to be a pretty clear effort on the part of our national security establishment to set up Gaddafi as the master terrorist and indeed as sort of a straw man. Again, we've looked at Gaddafi and the Turple and Wilson operation many times in the past, and it's very clear now that Turple and Wilson were not ex-CIA at all when they were working on the Gaddafi arming and training, that is, the arming and training of Gaddafi's terrorists. Of course, we've looked at how his Secret Service dates clean back to the Galen contingent that was sent over by the CIA first to Nasser and later upon Gaddafi's own request to Gaddafi himself. So the connections between U.S. intelligence and the U.S. national security establishment to Gaddafi are obviously very, very deep. And again, references for this are Radio Free America show number 4 about Turple and Wilson as one show to go to. The most recent Radio Free America program, number 22, also has a lot of good information about Gaddafi. And, of course, we also spoke about Gaddafi in connection with a number of things in our Mediterranean merry-go-round series about the Pope shooting. And so it remains to be seen what if anything comes down with regard to Gaddafi in the fall. But again, it's worth noting here that we have a conservative Republican and former Reagan staffer saying much the same kind of thing about American intentions in with regard to Libya that we've been saying, namely that Libya is the excuse not only for military adventurism abroad, but also for a restriction of civil liberties at home in order to resist the terrorist menace. And again, hearkening to the Reichstag scenario, where Hitler burned down the German parliament building, blamed it on the communists, used it as a provocation to obtain the emergency powers he desired, then used those emergency powers to set himself up as a total dictator, and the rest, as they say, is history. A couple of other things to note about this particular article. One, the fact that Heffron's paranoia, as Robert puts it, and I'm not sure that's necessarily the wisest choice of terms. Paranoia, recall, is neurotic fear or unrealistic fear. It remains to be seen whether or not Heffron's fear is unrealistic. My own feeling is that anybody messing with what he's messing with, at the level he's messing with it, it is in a lot of physical danger, and that the indications in that regard that are contained in this article are quite valid. By referring to his fear as paranoia, Paul Rauber, ever so slightly slanting the article. It does remain to be seen whether or not Heffron's fear is paranoia or justifiable fear, non-neurotic fear. That remains to be seen. But note Heffron's statement that these people play hardball. He seems to, obviously, that we've been indicating pretty directly that the Reagan administration does play hardball and that people who run afoul of it wind up dead. Unceremoniously dead, and that's something that we've talked about at great length in the past, and we'll be hinting at some skullduggery a little later on in this broadcast as well. One of the most interesting things that that was contained in that article to me was Heffron's statement that George Bush is basically running the country, that Reagan is a puppet at this point, that George Bush has basically taken over. We've taken a look at considerable length at the Reagan shooting, and we'll review a few of those a few of the Bush connections to the Reagan shooting in just a few minutes. We're gonna talk about World Vision, which John W. Hinckley Sr. was connected with. But it's worth noting that there are some interesting connections, quite possibly just circumstantial, between George Bush and the Hinckley family, the family of John Hinckley, the American Nazi who supposedly shot George Bush. It remains to be seen whether Hinckley was actually the assassin or a would-be assassin, or whether he was simply a decoy to draw attention away from the actual gunman, as I believe. But we'll see what happens. In any case, the handling of John W. Hinckley is significant for the same reason that the handling of Lee Harvey Oswald was significant. It has now been established beyond the barest shadow of a doubt that Lee Harvey Oswald did not kill President Kennedy alone or otherwise. The important thing about Oswald, though, and who shaped him, was that the people in Oswald's background are the people who created him as the media patsy for the assassination, and that's their significance. It's not that Oswald killed Kennedy, but it's that the people who set Oswald up as the supposed killer of Kennedy are the people that's the direction in which the actual investigation should point, the people setting Oswald up. Similar thing, in my opinion, because as I say, I don't think John W. Hinckley was the actual was intended as the mortal marksman, I guess you could say. I think he was more intended as a decoy at street level. There's an interesting picture in both Time and Newsweek of a man up on the balcony in perfect firing position where he could have placed a bullet in Reagan's armpit, as Hinckley was alleged to have done. But there are a lot of very serious discrepancies in the Reagan shooting case, and some interesting links going to the Bush family and also in the direction of an American Nazi party. So the sighting of George Bush is not only the man behind the proposed technology sale to China, which Heffron regards as a simple attempt to precipitate a nuclear war between China and Russia, but the image portrayed here by Heffron of George Bush, the former CIA director, as the real power behind the throne, jibes nicely with some of the things that we've been hinting at on this program, and that even before I became formally associated with it, when I was still a caller working in an informal basis on this program while I was working on sister station KKUP, we began proposing, that is to say Nip and I, that in essence with Ronald Reagan becoming president and he was not yet elected, that with a former CIA director behind him and given the history of political assassination in this country by our intelligence system, that that boded very poorly for the health of Ronald Reagan in the future. And of course, about 3 months after Reagan took office, he was shot. The role a possible role of George Bush in the administration and the effect that that shooting would have had on that obviously remains speculation. What is not a matter of speculation, though, of course, is if something should happen to Ronald Reagan, George Bush becomes the most powerful man in the country, or at least the allegedly most powerful man in the country. There may very well be people more powerful than Bush, but remains to be seen. Anyway, it's just interesting that so many of the kinds of things that we've been saying on this program and that May's been talking about on World Watchers crop up in connection with this article here. And again, as Paul Rauber, the author of the article, pointed out, it remains to be seen whether any of this bears out, but it also remains to be seen whether Roger Heffern is seen and what eventually happens to him, whether he winds up on the hit list, like on the hit parade, like so many other people who have fallen afoul of this administration or of the U.S. national security establishment in general. We're going to come back after a short musical break. We'll probably take several breaks this evening since I'm handling all the yakety-yakking by myself. We're going to take a short musical break, and then we're going to come back at about 9 o'clock, and we're going to read some more articles, and we'll probably take another break and finish up the articles and go to the phones. So, again, don't go away. We have plenty more reading, and then we're going to eventually get to the telephones here. So stay tuned. Don't go away. We're coming right back.